And welcome to another episode of 2 Minutes, Dos Minutos. We've got an exciting episode for you today as we're joined by a very, very funny man and good friend of mine, comedian and host of the Meet Dave podcast, Dave Williamson. Dave, welcome to 2 Minutes, Dos Minutos.
Thanks, guys. Super excited to be here. And thank you for doing my podcast.
I had the pleasure of being on Dave's podcast, Meet Dave, recently, a podcast that is going to be out soon. And make sure you listen to that and subscribe to Meet Dave.
Probably this Monday. Hashtag Meet Monday is when I drop my podcast.
All right, so there you have it. We're set. Mondays is the day. We're on Fridays. So you can start and end your weekend with the 2 Minutes, Dos Minutos, and Meet Dave.
I love it.
Full disclosure, Dave and I have known each other for a number of years through a mutual friend. Mm-hmm. We then kind of fell out, lost touch with that mutual friend, and so lost touch with each other. And then recently kind of got back together and realized that we had known each other for a number of years, and a couple of friends that you had shared with that we had hung out with together. So we go back a few years.
Yeah, that was more in my 20s, and I did a little bit of drinking back then. So
it's a little fuzzy. So it's great to have you. It's great to have you on the podcast, Dave. And again, as you mentioned, you and I had a chance to visit yesterday with your podcast, and before then, we had a chance to catch up and
sure, and
talk about our lives and how we got to where we are. And I just thought it was fascinating how both of our paths were so similar. If you don't mind, take a few minutes and just let our audience know, how did you become a comedian?
Sometimes I ask myself that. No, I think that anybody who's, you know, doing something they love and is basically chasing a passion, there's probably a lot of parallels with both of our stories. But for me, you know, I was in the car business and I liked the car business a lot, especially, you know, my family is very deep rooted in Miami. It was very fun to be part of a family business and part of the community. But as far as a hobby and a passion goes, I just loved comedy. Right. And I never thought I would leave the car business to go after comedy full time. But then 2008 happened.
That. Yeah.
And we had Saturn stores. So I was working at one of the Saturn stores, and that was kind of the path I was on. And we had to shut down our Saturn stores because, you know, General Motors killed it as part of the bailout with the big three and the whole economy thing. You might remember it.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
So, you know, I just decided that was probably, if I ever wanted to get it off my chest, if I ever wanted to just give it a go, because I'd been doing comedy for quite a while here at the Miami Improv and the Fort Lauderdale Improv and the West Palm Improv and, you know, a little bit on the road, but not really a lot because I, you know, I had a full-time job and I was having babies around that time. I just figured that was probably my best chance to go just try it out a little bit, you know? Didn't work, it didn't work. I could go back and work at my uncle's store and keep going on the path with the car dealership. So I came up with a one-year plan, and that turned into 3 years. And then we were like, what's the next step? And we decided we needed to move to L.A. So now that was almost 10 years ago.
Wow.
So I think this is my life now.
Well, congratulations on making it. You know, it's tough. It's a tough business. We were commenting before we started the interview that it never stops for you. I mean, you're constantly hustling and working and looking for that next gig or that next event or that next job or whatever it might be.
Oh, absolutely, man. Yeah, it's there's definitely a difference between entertainment industry in general, but comedy especially. The business has changed so much. Even just from when I kind of went heavier into it 10 years ago. I mean, I've been doing comedy for almost 17, 18 years now as a hobby, 10 years full time, maybe even a little longer than that now, because that was 2008 when the economy hit. Yeah, so like 12 years.
Wow.
You know, but it's just changed so much with the internet, and a lot of mom and pop clubs have closed down, and it's the bigger chains now that are surviving. Netflix is throwing millions of bucks at comics for specials. You know, it's just the landscape has definitely changed. Before, you had to absolutely be in New York or LA to give it a go. Now some guys are getting notoriety just because of podcasts and YouTube and things like that. Like, you can do it from other places. There's still a lot of advantages to being in New York and LA though, you know? So, yeah, no doubt, man. And then just when you think you have it figured out, something changes. Now I'm trying to figure out TikTok, you know, my kids are making fun of me like, that's for kids, Dad. And I'm like, well, whatever can help me put butts in seats when I do shows around the country.
Absolutely.
I'm happy to appeal to whatever demographic it is. Like, you know, so but something we were talking about yesterday, Michael, that was something that I really appreciated hearing you say when you were kind of at a turning point with your career and the announcing career with the Heat and all that stuff is the support of our wives.
Yes.
And I think that that's so important for anybody who's chasing a passion is to have your wife or, you know, whoever is your support system be on board. Because I'll tell you what, I wouldn't be where I am right now. Like, you know, if it wasn't for her being like, all right, what's the next step? All right, are we doing this? And the vision to be like, it's not going to happen overnight, you know. And I mean, we're still waiting to turn a lot of corners on this career, you know, like. Especially music is a little different. Like music, it's like if you don't hit it big by the time you're like 25, then kind of it's
time
hard
to go back to the car dealer.
Yeah, it's kind of hard. But you look at comedians, a lot of them don't even have any sort of like big time pop until they're in their 40s. So it's a very long play, you know? At least that's what I tell myself.
Well, you know, that is the one thing we shared in our stories is that when we came with this grand idea to our wives, how they both said, hey, look, in different words perhaps, but if you don't do it now, you'll regret not trying it for the rest of your life.
Sure.
So in both of our cases, very lucky that we were supported and said, give it a shot, go for it. I know how important it is to you. I know how happy it makes you. We'll do our best to try to make this thing work.
I would host the open mic nights at the Miami Improv and the Fort Lauderdale Improv. When I was in the car dealership, I'd pick a night. We get a weekday off in sales. So I would make sure that my weekday, when I first started, I'd make sure my weekday was off like on Wednesdays if that was the open mic night, because then I could go to the open mic nights. And then as I moved on, I still liked doing that because then I could host the open mics, you know. So my wife, if we didn't have kids then, when I was working the open mics, and she'd come with me, and all these guys were on the open mics with me, and it was always these retired dudes, you know. There's always these dudes in their 70s and whatever, and they were... It was obvious that they were doing it not just for fun, that they were like regretful that they didn't, you know, people have been telling them me funny on my whole life. And they were all these retired dentists and lawyers and doctors. And I'm like, you guys, what are you doing here? Like, you guys, you did it. Like, go take a cruise, man. You know? And they're there as like the dentist of comedy. Are you ready for your laughing gas? Like, you know? And it was, I mean, God bless you if it becomes a hobby at that point in your life, but you know, I think they all thought they were going to hit it big and it was their next big career, and it's like just too long of a road at that point in your life, I think. And so my wife was like, I never want you to be that guy. I don't want you to retire from the car dealership when you're 70 something years old and then go, now I'm going to go chase comedy, and it always nags at me, you know. So yeah. I was like, I agree. I'm going to go give it a year. If it doesn't work, at least I always know I dip my toe in the water of doing it full time and really giving it my full attention. And if not, I can live with that.
Well, you have an interesting story when you made that decision that you got on an RV across the country. Talk about that.
That could have gone either way. That could have been either the best or worst decision of my life. And I'm very blessed that it went the right way because it really was the best time of my life. So came up with that 1 year plan, and then 1 year turned into two, and 1 year turned into three, and things are going well. And, she's like, all right, well, what's the next step? I think you've done everything you can do from, you know, from Miami. And it's true, like, it was getting harder and harder because, you know, Miami's not exactly centrally located in the country. Right?
Yeah, no.
And I was having to go on the road to get more and more work. And so I said, well, you know, everyone's talks about moving to New York or LA. And we went and checked LA out. And she said, I like it. I could live here. So we started tossing that around. And then I went to a festival in Las Vegas. It's called the World Series of Comedy. And 500 people pay $20 to send in a tape, basically, to try to get into this competition. And then from that, they take 101 and they invite them to Vegas. And then from that, they battle it down to the winner.
Oh, wow.
So I went and just tried that. And I came in third place.
Wow, that's great.
And while I was there, I met another comedian who was traveling with his family in an RV. Now, mind you, he was traveling for like 3 weeks. You know? And I was so fascinated. And I was talking to his wife who was there. And I was, you know, I'm like, do you have your kids with you? And I'm like, I'm picking their brain. And I'm like, this sounds so fun. So as my prize for third place, I won a bunch of work at random comedy clubs around the country.
Oh, okay.
So I came home and I'm on cloud nine because I had all this validation of being in the top three. And
that was awesome.
And my wife and I were talking about kind of what's next. And I said, well, look, I got this crazy idea. And I go, I don't know if it'll work or not. I go, but what if we move to LA, but on the way to LA, we take like 3 months and I do a bunch of road work. And we'll just kind of work the road together. And then when we get there, then we'll figure out the next step of where we want to live in LA. And she got really excited, which I wasn't sure. We'd always talked about RVing when we like retired one day, but I didn't know she would be so on board to do it, you know, while we were at this point in our lives. And she was like, let's do it. And so I was like, all right, well, let's pump the brakes. like, let me see if I can book the work. Let me see if we can, how much an RV costs. I have no idea. And sure enough, man, everything fell into place. Like, I started hitting up the bookers. I took all the bookers. And it didn't matter if they were offering work the first, second, or third place. I just emailed them all. And I said, hey, I know you're only offering work for first place, but I know sometimes the comics don't even take the work. And if you'd have me, I'd love to come to the club. I'm more of a headliner than a feature, which was barely true at the time.
That's all right. They didn't have to know that.
Yeah, that's right. All right.
And then, you know, only a handful of them wrote me back, but of the ones that wrote me back, I said, hey, great. Hey, you know, if you book me this specific weekend, then you don't have to give me a hotel room. And most of those like mid-level clubs would love to save a buck. So they were like, done. So the calendar started filling up and it was all geographically, you know, in line. And I'm like, this could happen, babe. I'm like, it has to happen now because otherwise I'm going to be going to Iowa, you know, by myself. And I'm probably going to lose money by the time the flight and everything comes. But driving, it makes a lot of sense, you know. So the work came in. And then my grandma Betty called me one day and said she had a doctor's appointment. And she was like, do you mind driving me? And I was like, sure. I'm free today. I'll take you. And by total whim, I'm driving my grandma Betty to this doctor's appointment. And in the parking lot in the Home Depot, right next to her doctor's office, is a 25-foot travel trailer for sale. Oh. And I went over and I look at it. And I'm like, I'd been having a hard time finding one that would work for us. I go, this is perfect. So I went to the dealership and I traded in my two cars. And I bought a Chevy Tahoe. Sold myself a car. Wow. And we towed this 25-foot travel trailer behind the Chevy Tahoe. We sold everything that we owned and we found a renter for our house and we hit the road.
Wow.
And 3 months turned into 4 months because I got into the San Francisco comedy competition, which I made the finals for that, which takes a month if you keep going, if you keep winning. And then we got to LA and my wife looked at me and said, hey, I'm not ready to quit. Like, this is fun. Like, we're just getting good at this. And I'm like, are you serious?
Oh, wow.
She's incredible. Like, yeah. And I go, all right. She was homeschooling our kids. They were only like 2 or 4 at the time, like something like that, or 3 and 5. I don't know. And so I started hitting up bookers again and putting work back together. And I reached out. I had done it. So when we were in Vancouver, I got in a phone call when we were driving down, and it was this booker I met at another festival. And he's like, hey, Nickelodeon has this channel called Nick Mom. And they're doing a stand-up show where all they have is moms doing comedy for moms. Like, but we've run out of mom comics. I know you do a lot of jokes about kids. So will you come and do the show? And I go, great. And I go, yeah. And we go, where's it filming? And he goes, it's in Orlando. And I go, oh, I don't live in Florida anymore. And he goes, oh, man. He goes, all right. Well, you know what? In a few weeks, we're doing our final episode in New York. He's like, let me see if I can get you on that. So he did. He got me on that. So I fly. I leave my family in Vancouver. And in an RV park by themselves. I fly to New York. I taped this TV thing. It was the last show of the season, so they were doing a wrap party at this like Irish pub. So I go down to have a beer and network a little bit. I just end up talking to this lady as part of the whole thing at the bar and just chit-chatting. And I was telling her, she's like, are you going to do some more spots around the city while you were here? You know, I really liked Washington Night. Maybe we'll come see you. And I was like, oh, no, I have to leave tomorrow morning because I left my family in an RV park in Vancouver and I have a show tomorrow night. I'm headlining the Comedy Club of Vancouver all weekend. And she's like, back up. You left your family in an RV park? What? And I told her the whole story about us traveling. And so she gives me a business card. She says, that's super interesting. Please keep in touch. And she was the VP of programming for Nick Mom, Nickelodeon's Nick Mom or whatever. And I was like, oh, all right. Well, that's a good connection.
Yeah.
Oh,
wow. Yeah.
So when I'm deciding to stay in the RV for another, you know, what I thought it was maybe be a couple months, I sent her a pitch. And I said, here's a reality show pitch. Here's a pitch for my wife doing a blog. And here's a web series pitch. She wrote me back, Dave, I love it. We only have a budget for a web series, but I like your reality show idea. So I did basically, you know, little 2-minute videos of the next 10 weeks of us traveling. And she goes, we want it to look low production value, like home movies. I go, perfect, because that's what I can do.
Perfect, perfect.
Every morning, I made sure my kids weren't wearing anything with logos on it, unless it was Nickelodeon logos. And I just filmed them, and I just would come up with some funny like a commentary to it. I didn't want to mic my kids, so I would get a little audio from them, but it was mostly me at like 1 in the morning in my car doing a voiceover with a recorder, right, in the RV park.
Oh, my goodness.
And then I would have my videos... Like, you know, I had to upload it to them by, like, let's say, like, Tuesday morning every week. So I'd, like, be up late at night Monday editing.
Wow.
And then I'd have to drive into town to whatever town we were at and find a Starbucks. And then Starbucks wasn't open yet. And it, I had a video. I'm, like, trying to imagine, like, Wi-Fi 10 years ago.
Right.
And
good luck with that. How long were you waiting for that to upload?
Yeah. So I'd be there for, like, an hour just waiting for this video to upload. And so one time I fell asleep outside the Starbucks in, like, Phoenix or something. And the guys were coming at like 4 in the morning to like open the Starbucks. Oh, and my. They were just thought I was just a homeless guy with a laptop.
Oh, God.
So anyways, that helped out a lot. And that motivated us to stay, keep going on the road. And we ended up doing it for a year and a half.
Wow.
A year and a half. We just toured the country. I worked nonstop. And it was the best time of my life. No junk mail. Got to hang out with my kids. It was like every club was my home comedy club. So I got to sleep in my own mattress and eat home-cooked meals, go hiking with my family. And,
oh, my.
You know, it was great. So moral of the story is my wife's all in.
That's right. That's
she's
right.
A saint.
Once again, joined by Dave Williamson, a very funny comedian and host of the Meet Dave podcast. Dave, you mentioned in talking about that awesome story, the inspiration in your work. And folks, if you haven't seen Dave, he's hysterical. You can find a lot of his stuff on YouTube. Check him out there. A lot of your act talks about your family, your kids.
Yeah.
Is that where the inspiration comes from, just everyday living with young kids?
100%. I keep trying to write stuff that's not like dad stuff. And then my kids will do something funny and I just go, well, that's 10 minutes I can't ignore. Like, you know. So, yeah, and that's the best stuff is just real. I like to tell stories. And
that can relate good. To people.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's just going to be, you know, it connects with people if there's an authenticity to it. Now, I might embellish here and there.
Well, nothing wrong with that.
Tonight, you guys are going to hear a story that includes Michael.
Oh. Actually.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, that's nice.
Oh, boy. And we're sitting in the VIP.
Yeah.
Up close.
Yeah. It's a little boy.
You things to throw at VIP, you know, that maybe you can throw something. Yeah. No, we wouldn't do that.
No. Yeah, this isn't vaudeville. You're going to like squishy tomatoes.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's so, like, I'll give you an example. I remember one time I was sitting at my desk. My in-laws were visiting, and I was out in my man cave, my house here in Miami, and we lived in Miami. And I'm sitting at my computer trying to write jokes. And I can't come up with anything, right? So I'm sitting there, and I'm like, oh, I just got writer's block. So then my uncle messaged me and said, hey, do you want to go to the Miami Hurricanes basketball game today? And I was like, all right, you know what? My in-law's in town. I know my father-in-law would enjoy that. I'll take him and we'll go, right? So I take my father-in-law, my oldest son, who is probably 6 at the time, and his buddy, right? So I take them down to the game, and we're sitting there. And I used to tell my son, he was still is a huge basketball fan. But back then, you know, he couldn't identify as easily which team was which. So we had a little system. We would say one, you know, like the blue team is the bad guys and the white team is the good guys, whatever. So it was good guys, bad guys, right? So we get there and he's like, Daddy, which team's Canes? Which team's the Hurricanes, Daddy? Right? And I was like, all right, so the Hurricanes are wearing the orange jerseys. They're the good guys. And the Wake Forest is wearing the black jerseys. They're the bad guys. And my son stands up on his chair in a particularly quiet point in the game and with all the volume of a passionate sports fan screams, we don't like the black guys. I'm just sitting there like, whoa, buddy.
Damage control.
Yeah. That
you
was great.
You cannot do that.
That was great. Yeah. Oh, my God.
That's not my
good.
And I had this whole, like
oh, wait a minute.
I was like, oh, my goodness. How do I backpedal out of this one, right? And, but, you know, after a time, I started telling that story on stage, and it turned into a really good joke on stage.
Absolutely.
And, you know, I grew it into a long story, and, you know, I even was doing a little Donald Sterling reference to it and everything, so it became, like, topical when I was doing it at the time.
Sure.
And everything. And, you know, I just think, like, if I had stayed stubbornly at my computer trying to wrestle with something, I would have got some boring joke out of it probably. But just going and living life in that real moment of my son doing that and putting me in that position, and like the fear of somebody thinking you're racist, and you know, or my 6-year-old is racist.
Yeah,
like that turned into a real moment that people can kind of like relate to, like, oh, you were in a bad position there, you know? And
oh,
so it
man.
Became a really good story for me. You know?
Fantastic story. By the way, how do you talked about the booking agents. Do you do that today, or you book your own gigs today?
I mean, for the most part, I still book all my old stuff. I mean, I'm one of the few comedians, I think, that comes from a business background. Most of them are not really savvy with it. So I was always comfortable writing emails. And I actually really invested in, when I first made the leap into, like, all right, we have the one-year plan, I'm going after this, I applied for every comedy festival I could do. And I decided, even if I didn't get in, I was still going to go, because all the bookers are there. So it's more likely that I'd be able to walk up to them, shake my hand, introduce myself, watch me do a set, and they, you know, I actually get somewhere with them, instead of just emailing them a DVD or a set, or snail mailing them a DVD or something, and they're just going into a pile, you know? You know, I really worked at networking myself and booking myself places.
Oh, that's incredible.
A lot of clubs who I knew, if they had 3 or 4 locations, I would offer to go just take it on the chin, or maybe have a break even weekend and just go like be an opener for the weekend. And I knew that I would do a good job, and then they would hire me back to do, you know, more weekends and stuff. So, you know, I invested in myself, I guess.
Oh, yes.
In that way. And I still do a lot of the booking myself. I feel very comfortable with it. I've produced a lot of shows, and, you know, I think I'm pretty good at it. But if you know somebody who's a big-time booker, though, I'd be more than happy to take an introduction.
I got a question. You tend to travel, looks like, the U.S. and Canada. Are there other countries involved?
I love working Canada.
Oh, okay.
Why is that? 3 of my favorite clubs to work are in Canada, and I don't know if it's just coincidence. Or if I, this is what I think, and I could be wrong. I feel like the Canadian people research who they're going out to see.
Really?
So even if you're not famous, they look you up and they see who all's on the calendar, and then they research you, and then they say, like, oh, okay, if we're going to go to one show this month, this guy fits our sensibilities. We're going to like this guy. So now you're the crowd's full of people who are more likely to like your brand of humor versus just showing up at the club and then it not be what they like and then them blaming you for that. Like, no, just do a little research, man, you know? I'm sure there's another comic who's totally different from me next week that you'll like better, you know, if it matters to you. So, I don't know. I think that's why. I just think that they maybe approach going out. Like, look, Winnipeg in the winter, it's like you're like risking your life to go out and go to the club.
It's got
to
be worth it.
Yeah,
if you want
to
leave.
They want to do the legwork to make sure that they're picking the right night to go out.
That's funny.
How about the weirdest or the funniest thing that's ever happened to you while you're performing? Anything strange that happened? You
know? I worked cruise ships for a little while.
Oh boy. Okay.
And so the very first time I worked a cruise ship, they paired me up with this dude who was like one of their, like, you know, go-to guys. Like, you know, like the guy who's like, you know, he's going to show you the ropes. And so we were doing like 2 or 3 shows a night in the comedy club. And I networked in with a dude I knew here in Miami. So once again, I didn't have a cruise ship booker that was like spoon feeding me information. I just kind of like sent a packet in. This guy called me up. He's like, the boss told me to give you a look. And he's like, how about November of next year? And I was like, whatever it takes, man. So like 3 or 4 days into this cruise, the guy who was supposed to be showing me the ropes tells me, hey, man, you know, on the last day, we have to do 30 minutes squeaky clean. There's going to be kids in the audience in the theater, and you can't use any of the material you've used so far. And I'm like, look, that's usually not a problem, but you didn't tell me that. And I've just been burning all kinds of material the past few days because I'm like trying to see what works on the ships, what doesn't, old jokes, new jokes. And I'm like, I could have easily kept 30 minutes in my back pocket, but I didn't know that. And I was just burning it.
Yeah.
So now I'm like panicking. And so I have this one bit that I was like, this is a little borderline. Like, you know, because it talked about owning a gun. And I wasn't supposed to talk about gun control and political stuff like that. And I go, I think I can modify this and soften it and get away with this, right? So I'm a little nervous about my final set. And we're in the big theater. And the place is packed. And I'm going out first. And the cruise director introduces me. And I go out. And I do that bit first. Because I just want to get it out of the way. And then move on, right?
Oh, my.
So I open with it. It gets a huge laugh. And I'm going into the second part of it, right? And I'm starting to relax and everyone's laughing and everything's cool. And then this waiter comes rushing the stage.
Oh my. Right?
And he's looking at me and he's got his finger up to his lips going, shh, 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 like that. And I'm like, oh no. There's like a boss in the back of the room or the cruise director's in the back of the room and he didn't like that bit and now I'm going to get fired and this waiter's trying to help me and he's throwing me a bone and whatever. So I just bailed on the bit and I started a new bit and I'm panicking in my head. I'm trying to be cool or whatever. And then I'm starting the next bit and this guy's still there like, shh, but now he's like waving at me and I can't concentrate. I'm like, what is happening, right? And the guy's waving me over. And so I'm like, I finally was like, excuse me, everybody. I'm really sorry about this. Can you just give me a moment? And I walked over to the edge and I leaned down to where this waiter is. And I would think, like, is the ship sinking? And this guy wants me to make an announcement.
Is
there a terrorist on board? Is this, definitely feels like a Steven Seagal movie. Like, you know, like now the comedian has to go battle the terrorist or something. And I'm freaking out. And I go, I pull the mic down and I go, what is it, bro? And he's like, listen. And he holds up a cruise card. And he goes, this guy, I don't remember what he ordered. And I don't remember where he's sitting.
He wanted you to make an announcement.
And I go, what do you want me to do about it? He goes, can you help me find out where he's sitting and what he ordered?
Oh, my.
And I'm like, dude, are you seriously? Are you interrupting my set for this? Like, anyone else in that big theater, if they were doing the production of Cats or something, they would, like, there's no way a waiter would go up and interrupt them. And like, why
oh
me?
Oh, my. Oh, my.
So now the audience is, like, concerned. Like, there's tension in the room. They're like, what is this? Like, what is the announcement going to be? And I take a deep breath, and I pull the microphone up to my mouth, and I go, listen, guys, you know what? I can't do it. I go, you do it. And I handed him the microphone. And the guy turns to the crowd with the microphone and goes, listen, Mr. Dennis Gibbons, I can't remember what you ordered and where are you sitting? like a thick accent.
Oh,
you know?
My God.
And the place erupts in laughter.
Oh,
I put my hands in my head. I took the mic back from him. I'm like, where are you, Dennis? Like, you interrupted my show because you're moving seats. Like,
oh, my God.
You better have ordered a good cocktail because there's no way I'm going to be happy if you interrupted my show for a bottle of water. Like, you know?
Oh, man. So
the guy, and looking back, did me a favor because then I just made fun of him for 20 minutes.
Yeah, absolutely.
There you go.
And the crowd loved it. And I just crushed that guy.
That was a funny moment. Now, when I think about that, and you've done this for a while now. You what, been 17 or 18 years now?
Yeah, I started doing it as a hobby right out of college.
Yeah, so you must have been involved in the whole comedy. Who inspired you to be a comedian?
Well, I mean, I can give you cheesy answers to that, and I can give you very straightforward answers to that. I think stand-up comedians that I was a fan of, and I really like.
Who are your top five?
Oh, man, top five. Well, I really like Brian Regan. I've always liked Brian Regan. He's timeless. He's like clean. Not that I like all kinds of comedy, but I just think it's impressive when you could be that funny in that mainstream, you're clean. And he's just a trip, dude. He's just, I don't know. He's the only guy I've paid to go see live multiple times. Like, you know, I really like, I got to open for Jim Gaffigan one time. That was really cool. I really him.
Yeah.
I mean, the guys right now that are crushing it, who, you know, are undeniable. And I like Bill Burr and Jim Jeffries. And actually, I get to open a lot for a guy named Bert Kreischer, who's crushing it right now. He's doing really well. And so that's kind of fun because, you know, he's my friend and he's doing well, but I also enjoy, you know, enjoy watching him, you know. There's a guy named Ian Bagg who is hilarious. He comes out and does the improvs all the time. And I used to open for him when he would work the Miami Improv, and he works the crowd. And that's really fun to watch because, one, it's not my style. There's no way I would ever, like, dream of doing what he does. So it's kind of fun because you're not watching it like, I wish I had thought of that. Like, you know, you're watching it like, oh, I admire that you do that because that's not my skill set, you know? And two, it's not like you're seeing the same set over and over again. Like, you're just there. And like, I didn't want to leave the showroom because, like, every show's different. Who knows what could happen, you know? So he's a guy that definitely people should check out. But, you know, I started doing sketch comedy, and that's how I started doing comedy. I chased my wife, who was then my girlfriend. She took a job in Charlotte out of college, so I chased her up there. Hmm. And there was this really cool little sketch comedy club. I went there and had a blast. We went on a date, you know, and I asked him. I was freelance writing sports, high school sports at the time. I was like, hey, I'm a writer. I would love to write sketches. I grew up a huge Saturday Night Live fan. And here, just to answer your question even better, I loved Dana Carvey growing up.
Oh, I love
Saturday Night Live and Dana Carvey.
He's
probably one of the only guys who, like, I get really, like, you know, starstruck with. And I got to open for him about a year or two ago.
Oh, man.
Wow, that's
awesome.
And so
I could spend a weekend opening for him. And then even better than that was when I ran into him, like, you know, 5 or 6 months later, and he remembered me. He was like, hey, Dave, how you been? I'm like, Dana Carvey knows who I am.
Yes.
Isn't that special? So... Anyways, I worked at this sketch comedy club in Charlotte, and, you know, because they told me, they're like, well, we just write our own stuff. You got to try out for the group. I'm like, well, I don't know if I'm a performer or not. And they're like, got to try out. And I think I got in the group only because I had a reliable vehicle, and they had a road gig coming up. But I really went into it hard for like 2 years doing sketch comedy. And I mean, at the time, those guys were my heroes. I was like, dude, I looked up to those dudes. And then next thing I know, I'm like one of the main writers in the group and learning from them. And when I moved back here and started coaching water polo and doing the car business and things like that, I was like, well, I don't have time to do rehearsals and stuff like that. I go, I better learn how to do stand-up.
Okay.
So that's when I started doing stand-up.
Well, you mentioned your inspirations. You inspire us. So how do we get a hold of you? It's a, what, Meet Dave podcast? How do we get a hold of you? We want to be part of your VIP guest tonight.
Yeah,
so
yeah, you are. You guys
are big fans of
VIP
yours.
Tickets. The best is Instagram. I really like Instagram the best. So I upload most content to that. So that's at Dave W Comedy. And then my podcast is Meet Dave. So anywhere you listen to podcasts, just go to M-E-A-T Dave. And I'll tell you what, too, man, mentioning the podcast and stuff, too. Like, I have a hard time with that question of, like, you know, who are your heroes and whatever in comedy? Because, you know, I'd like to think that at this point they're like my friends and my peers for the most part, you know. But yeah. I really look up to pitmasters because I'm still learning. You know, I'm only a few years into being a barbecue guy myself. But I really admire those guys because barbecue is not something where you just go and grill a burger for 5 minutes. Like, I know if someone's doing a brisket or if someone has a barbecue restaurant and it takes so much energy and lack of sleep and commitment and time for something that might end up not servable. You know what I mean? If you don't hit the mark right on.
Yeah,
none of those guys are going to serve a bad brisket. Yeah. So I've really started to, pitmasters have become my heroes, you know? And so my podcast lets me reach out to them when I'm on the road and go meet them. And it's such a blast. Nobody's ever told me no yet. It's just whether a schedule works out, you know? And I'll go and sit down with them and ask them about barbecue or just their life. And we shoot the shit. And then they usually give me a bunch of barbecue to sample for free, which is a nice perk.
Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah. So barbecue's really become a world where I admire the people in it.
So tell me about our listeners here going to subscribe to Meet Dave. So you've already told us they're going to hear from some of the pit masters that you look up to and you've had a chance to visit with. What else do you get on Meet Dave?
Well, I've tried not to. The reason why I called it meat and not just specifically barbecue is I don't want to pigeonhole myself into, you know, only one thing. So, you know, I've interviewed butcher shop owners. I've interviewed just celebrities who, you know, have a passion for cooking. I've interviewed, you know, my buddies who've just come over and eaten my barbecue. So I try not to limit myself to who can be on it. I've had episodes where it's just me talking. I'm like, I smoked a turkey for Thanksgiving at my in-laws, and it's the first time I borrowed a smoker, and then I was smoking in the snow, you know, and it was like all these variables, and it was a journey. It was a battle of me like not screwing up the Thanksgiving turkey. I didn't go to sleep that night.
That's some pressure right there.
So,
let me tell you.
Yeah, so I did a solo podcast of just talking about my journey of getting the turkey good for Thanksgiving. You know, so I'm just super into it right now.
Well, with that said, we're so grateful that you came up today to our podcast. And there's one thing that we always do to end our podcast for a special guest like yourself. Michael will introduce you like if you're starting for the Miami Heat.
And now, stand up and make some noise for Dave Williamson.
That guy's the best. That guy's the best. We love Dave.
Dave, thank you so much for being with us here at the Zeus Tech Studios on 2 Minutes Dos Minutos. It's been an absolute blast, and best of luck with your 3-city tour and also going forward with your career, buddy.
Thanks, brother. And that was a pretty dirty trick you guys pulled by making me talk about myself the whole time, so I didn't tell some of the great stories I have about Michael from over the years.
That'll be for a future episode of 2 Minutes Dos Minutos.
I've got them in my back pocket.
Take care, buddy. Once again, thank you so much for listening to 2 Minutes Dos Minutos. We hope you enjoyed our interview with a very funny man and the host of the Meet Dave podcast, Dave Williamson. And we look forward to having you join us for a future 2 Minutes Dos Minutos. Take care, everyone.